Okay. Jonathan is a Canadian actuary. He started with Manulife 10 years ago in Kitchener, Waterloo. After a few years of experience in many roles in Toronto and Montreal, he attained his fellowship and he moved to Asia. He spent some time in Singapore leading the high net worth pricing team. He became chief actuary of Manulife in Cambodia, where he led valuation, pricing, and product development. He is currently the head of actuarial services for Manulife in the Philippines, providing leadership and oversight of 150 actuarial staff as part of Manulife's global offshore actuarial functions. Tonight, Jonathan will be speaking about actuarial landscape in Asia, multiculture, and international opportunities. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jonathan Bundy.
Thank you. Everyone can hear me okay?
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, first of all, let me just express gratitude for the opportunity to speak to all of you today. I know it's the 30th anniversary, the first meeting in several years in person, so I really appreciate that. Don't take it lightly. And as I'll share through my presentation, I do want to keep it a little bit light, really want to keep it engaging as well. So I've been very fortunate to have the opportunity to work in a number of different markets. I'm still progressing through my career, so hoping to share a bit of insight into how I've been able to navigate through different cultures, different environments, how I look at opportunities around Asia. And certainly there is a big need for actuarial talent, lots of opportunity out there. But please, at any time, feel free to interject, share your experience. I think we have some really experienced actuaries here. We'd love to hear from you. And certainly ask your questions as well. So just a little note before I jump into it. Look, I'm gonna talk a little bit about the experiences that I've had, some lessons that I've learned through my career, and what each market that I've been in looks like and means to me. But that's just the perspective that I have, and there's certainly a lot more out there. So for those of you that have been in some of the same markets that I have, please feel free to share more. That said, just want to start off talking a little bit about Canada. Obviously, we're all here now, but it certainly is home for me, and certainly is the absolute foundation for all the experience that I've had and all the success that I've been able to have across Asia. Started off my actuarial pathway at Concordia University in Montreal. There's a great, not very well known, but great program there, and particularly want to call out the internship program. So actually, my kind of mobility experience really started at the internship level, where I took an internship in different cities every time, different companies and functions. And I think I've always been really, really into maintaining a learning curve in my role, never getting too comfortable, being willing to be in positions where I'm not the expert, where I need to figure things out. And fortunate to be part of a company, I think, as many of us are, where that continuous learning is something that's very valued in the actuarial career. Then I listed a couple of my rotations here, but really want to think a little bit more and share more on what are some of the insights that I had from my time in Canada, as well as some of the particularly impactful moments of my career that helped contribute to the experience that I've had later on. I guess the first one that I want to share about really, and I've learned to appreciate this more and more, is the quality of education that we have in Canada, not just from the university level, but also through the CIA, the SOA, and also the peer learning that we have available. I think is a real asset that doesn't exist in every market in Asia. There's certain markets, and I'll talk about a few of it, where the regulatory environment, the financial market, and just the level of maturity of the industry itself isn't the same as we have here. So I really appreciate all the learnings that I've had coming up through the Canadian system and been able to bring that into other markets. Then I think particularly for those of you who might be thinking about opportunities in Asia, and talk about this a little bit more at the end, something that's been very important for me in a large multinational company is the idea of social capital, building out a reputation, strong network, not just within the company, but actually it's a small actuarial world internationally as well. There are many people who go back and forth between countries, and you know, we have to work with through various partnerships, engagements, and I think maintaining that network, maintaining those relationships has been something that I've really treasured and appreciated and benefited from. And the last thing, and this really is a common theme throughout the journey that I've had, is around the influence of what it means to be a great leader, and something that I try to certainly emulate, as I've actually been able to help staff relocate internationally as well. But a lot of the managers I had, especially in Canada, really were very selfless when it came to how they managed my career, encouraging me to take on opportunities sometimes outside of their teams, sponsoring me to take on different activities that didn't directly benefit them, but as part of, you know, thinking about a bigger organization, thinking about the long-term impact of, you know, the legacy we have, influencing people over the course of their career, really helping people maximize their potential, I think is something that that I've had a few very great managers do for me, and I strive to do as well. So just a few thoughts around Canada, some experiences here. You see exam failure. Hopefully not everybody here has had to deal with that, but I suspect many of us have. And the reason I bring it up is really, I think one of the big benefits of the exams that we all go through is, well, first, the creation of the common journey. You know, that's something that holds us together, all actuaries internationally, every market. But also just the discipline around perseverance, picking yourself up, building good habits and work ethic, and learning agility. And the behaviors that are required to persevere through the exam progress are actually really important when it comes to succeeding in different environments, different markets. So the last thing I'll say about Canada here is just, while I am away in Asia, Canada obviously is still home. One of the really difficult parts about being international is about, you know, the sacrifice that you're making in being away. Particularly, I don't know if there's anyone else here who moved away during or around COVID, but I certainly expected to be able to come back home more frequently than turned out I was able to. So when I think about Canada, I've obviously got a little bit of my family here, but also from Montreal. The lake house cottages are a big part of our lifestyle, so that's always kind of my roots and how I think about coming home. So how did I go international, I guess, started that career journey? Well, my last role in Toronto was part of what we call our Actuarial Resource Center. I think many of the organizations here have similar kind of project-based internal consulting teams. A lot of the time, those roles are maybe supporting work remotely, but performed within the same city. One day I got asked to go to Singapore, really as a consequence of some turnover that happened in the organization at the senior management level and downstream through the organization as well. So they needed some resources and needed someone on site to help manage the transition of onboarding new leadership in the actuarial function. So my team, and I think there's a few former teammates here as well, were actually asked, you know, who wants to go to Singapore? And I was not the first person that was asked, to be honest. But I was the first person to say yes. So that's also a theme that I'll talk a little bit today about, but there is a lot of opportunity out there. It's not always obvious. On the face of it, it may not always be attractive or the right timing, but it can be incredibly beneficial and rewarding. So when I said yes to go to Singapore, it was supposed to be just for a couple months. They asked me to, like I said, help onboard and transition a few people into the team locally, but then also to launch a product, which I'll talk a little bit about afterwards, because it was a pretty significant product launch in the market. Supposed to be only a few months, and 6 years later, I'm still there. So a few things happened along the way. So yeah, talking a little bit about Singapore here. The role that I took on was leadership in the pricing team. The Singapore market is very different from Canada, but at the same time, it's a really great entry point into Asia for anyone coming from Canada. And you could probably say the same thing about Hong Kong, but hyper clean, modern, efficient city. You know, the government works a little bit differently, which is something to get used to, but it actually works very well. And really kind of forces you to think a little bit differently about, you know, different ways of having a good society. One of the interesting things, for, you know, before I talk about the actuarial side of things in Singapore, was Singapore is known as a global city, multicultural city, and it certainly is, but it's a different kind of multiculture than exists in Canada. I think one of the things I've been very proud about as a Canadian is embracing our multiculturalism, and I think we kind of see ourselves a bit as a melting pot. In Singapore, you have a lot of different cultures that exist very distinctly and collaborate very, very harmoniously. And you know, there's a very distinct, we all have Chinatown here, very Chinatown, but we have Little India, and many different areas of Singapore with their distinct architecture, culture, language, and that reflects in the business environment as well, where there are people, not actually that many Singaporeans in the business environment are born and raised in Singapore. A lot of people coming internationally, particularly from Malaysia, but many countries in the world. And another big difference when we think about the market in Singapore, but it extends to Asia as well, is just the degree of focus on innovation at the product space, the competition for market share. Certainly in Canada, when we think about, at least in the life space, which is where I am, a lot of stability in the market. In Singapore, it's a very, very heavy competition. And the distribution works a little bit differently as well. There's a lot more focus on distribution through the banks. So most of that's a very common distribution channel in Asia, having partnership deals with various banking partners. I know we have here a few members who work in the banking industry in Canada, where a lot of them have their own insurance operation. That's a bit less common in Asia. And then particularly in Singapore, the customer base looks a little bit different. The insurance market and the actual premium is quite substantial, but in terms of population, Singapore is obviously much smaller, and then you have a lot of international clients as well coming in for access to the financial markets. So particularly in the banking space, there's a heavy competition for ultra high net worth customers that, I'm jumping a little bit ahead, but there are actually some customers in Singapore with individual policies bigger than my balance sheet that I had in Cambodia. So you can, just a funny thing to think about. So arriving in Singapore, I was immediately very... Is it okay now?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that. Arriving in Singapore, really immediately able to integrate myself, settle in well, and it's a great, great quality of life. So for those of you who haven't been there, I do definitely suggest to add it to your itinerary. But fitting into the team was something that did take a little bit of time, particularly coming in on a temporary assignment. A lot of the team was very tenured, very well established, and I was coming into a bit of a leadership role and needed to really create a sense of community, bond, and trust with the team. And I think for those of you who've moved perhaps to different companies or different roles, you'll have seen that as well, but really just needed to put my head down and work hard, show them what I could do. The Index Universal Life product is something that was discussed in the market for a number of years, and particularly in Manulife, something that we wanted to launch for several years, but it's a very challenging product. There are a few players in the international space, like some out of Bermuda, for example, that have had that product for a while, but not many insurers offer that product. Functions very similarly to a universal life product, except the account values invested in various indices in different kind of proportions and percentages, but it also still has a guarantee that functions through swaps and other derivative arrangements that are hedged by the company, and quite complex to introduce into the Singapore market, not just in terms of having the operational capability to manage those, but also to get the regulatory approval. The MAS, the regulator in Singapore, is very hands-on, particularly when it comes to new product innovation, as well as when it comes to managing reinsurance arrangements that are novel. So there was a huge amount of work that was required to get that product off the ground and get the various stakeholders involved that are not internally, not actuarial. And that was something that I thought I really was able to add a lot of value in. And I have a point here around generalization and specialization. I think particularly in Asia, a lot of the training is focused on very heavy specialization, technical mastery and expertise. So there are some amazing actuaries out there. But for me, coming through the rotation program that I had in Canada and coming from the corporate background, where I was able to add a lot of value was actually the network that I had, knowing who to contact within the organization so we didn't have to reinvent the wheel as we were trying to put this product together. That was something I think the team had struggled with in the past. And one of the reasons why it was helpful I was there, they had been trying to do a lot of it themselves. And I think that's also a good lesson here as well, is I think as we progress in our careers, it's not really about what we can do individually, but very much about the outcomes that we can create. And if you can do that by knowing the right person or finding, you know, not having to do something from scratch, that's actually a lot better than trying to do it yourself. One of the really important experiences and decisions that I had to make when I was in Singapore was, I have to go home soon. And I didn't mention it earlier, but in particular, I was very attached to Canada at the time because I had been in a very long-term, serious relationship. Was ready to propose and get married, and had never really intended to come out to Asia before. And you know, hopefully none of you are faced with the same kind of decisions, but it's a very important part about considering to change a big aspect of your life, like your career, like the country of residence that you have. But before I resolve that with all of you, one of the really important experiences that I had in Singapore was about attending Asia Finance and Actuarial Conference that we have, which is really all the Asia actuarial finance leaders across Manulife. So we operate in 11 different segments, 11 different markets across Asia. We get together once a year. Usually that's reserved for pretty, a certain level in the organization. And normally, the pricing officer would be invited. Singapore obviously at that time didn't have a pricing officer. They were still being transitioned in, and I was kind of the placeholder. I wasn't on the original invitation list, but I asked to join. And if I didn't ask to join that, nobody would have thought twice. I wouldn't have been invited, and honestly, I would have been probably back in Canada. And I think that's something that also I will encourage all of you to think about, is if you don't ask to be included, or you don't ask a question you don't know, you're not going to get an answer. Sometimes you'll get a no if you ask, and that's okay. But you might get a yes, and that can have a really big impact on your life. So in particular, at that conference, that was my introduction to a lot of the stakeholders and key folks within the Asia segment. So I don't know how many of us here today are part of like corporate or group areas. We tend to, at least in Manulife, we call it the Asia segment, but it's actually 11 distinct markets. And while we have our regional office, each of the markets operate with some degree of autonomy and have a lot of people that we don't interact with from the group and corporate side. So building that network there was actually really instrumental into how I arrived and ultimately in Cambodia. I wasn't looking for a different role at the time. I was just happened to meet a few of the folks, the CFO of Cambodia in particular, and several months later, they ultimately remembered, oh, there's an international actuary in Singapore who might be looking for something. Let's put him on a short list ultimately. So if I hadn't attended that conference, that wouldn't have had the same direction in my career. So after my assignment in Singapore got extended a couple different times, they ultimately asked me to stay permanently. And that did change things on the personal side because I'd been intending to go home. They definitely made a very compelling offer, which was really honored to receive. And then had to really address the elephant in the room with the relationship. And there's no bad people in this scenario, I think, but we really couldn't come to a mutually agreeable decision around how to manage that, whether that's through long distance or otherwise. So ultimately, I realized, if I was honest with myself, which was very difficult to be, that I would regret not coming out to Asia. And so I decided I wanted to pursue that. But as part of that decision-making process, I decided it would be wise to really explore what opportunities are available, particularly in Canada. I figured maybe coming back home, I could go to a different role. and that would kind of keep me excited on the career pathway. As part of that, I looked at our global job postings and saw that there was the Chief Actuary Cambodia role available. I had certainly never anticipated, particularly that early in my career, being a chief actuary, never contemplated it. But while I was exploring, you know, opportunities back home, I figured maybe it's a little bit crazy, but why not throw my head in the ring for something that's really exciting? In particular for Cambodia, and I think this applies in a lot of the emerging markets across Asia, there's not really the same level of overhead and infrastructure that exists in mature markets. So when I say chief actuary for Cambodia, that's actually chief actuary, product officer, pricing officer, risk officer. Very small balance sheet, but you still have to perform all of those activities even in a smaller market. So I had a lot of experience at that point on several of those areas, certainly not all of them. And I figured that it would be worth a shot. So two things that really contributed to me getting the role that I really only learned later on. The first is there weren't a lot of internal candidates. And I think that's true for a lot of international opportunities. On paper, I personally think of, you know, a chief actuary role sounds very glamorous, sounds very exciting, but not everybody's mobile, not everybody's looking for roles at the same time, and not everybody is necessarily looking for roles that have such a wide portfolio or a huge challenge that's immediately facing them. So I think that if you're prepared to put yourself out there for something that maybe you're not immediately prepared for, or maybe seems like it's a little bit too much, let somebody else tell you no, because you never know. Yep.
Question. Since you worked in Singapore, how did you get the local housing price versus the expat housing price, which is like several times different?
Yeah, so fortunately, rent was not as high as it is now at that time, but it is prohibitive, certainly. And I haven't planned to talk too much about like how the compensation works for international opportunities, but fair enough. While I was on the short-term assignment here, I was still tied to Manulife Canada, so housing was provided in the short term, which is certainly an important consideration. You know, particularly you go to markets. Well, I mean, Toronto, I guess, is also a very expensive market, but real estate certainly at a premium. So housing is going to be a little bit more cozy, I guess you could say. So for short-term nature, sometimes companies will, you know, provide certain allowances which will cover housing. When you get to longer-term assignments, it would look a little bit different. But particularly if you're exploring international opportunities, you should think a little bit about cost of living, salary packages, making sure you're getting a competitive offer, and that math is going to factor into your ultimate decision. I would say that while it may be a bit counterintuitive, sometimes you can have a higher quality of life in a more emerging market because cost of living is significantly cheaper. And I don't know if any of you have been exploring the Singapore real estate market recently, but I have a number of friends who are renewing their leases right now, and rents are going up by 60, 70% sometimes. It's pretty crazy. So thanks for the question, and please, anyone, anytime, continue to ask anything else. So the second thing, and I alluded to it earlier, where there wasn't a lot of internal candidates to the role, but also I had met the CFO for Cambodia in this random conference that I didn't think a whole lot about, and we had built off a good rapport. And before, as I applied, it's a small world, right? Particularly, I think in Asia, when we do hiring for senior roles, it's not really just based on interview feedback. We like to know how someone's worked with people that we know and trust. So the CFO for Cambodia at the time reached out to my managers in Singapore, my managers in Canada, and that made a big influence on entrusting me with that opportunity, where I don't think an external candidate who didn't have that familiarity or network within Manulife at that time necessarily would have had the same opportunity. So just circling back to the power of that social capital, and I encourage all of you to treasure that in your roles. There are certainly advantages of moving from company to company, and I won't won't discount that, but I've also found that staying within Manulife has, and within just my organization in general, has come with a lot of benefits in that regard. So I received the offer to, maybe the last thing I would say is around applying to this role. I almost didn't apply, even as much as it was an exciting opportunity. I had several people, close mentors that I counted on, whose opinions I trusted. I asked them literally, am I crazy to think about applying for this? I received a little bit of encouragement, and that really made a huge difference for me. So hopefully, whether you're in that position, you'll get the same encouragement, or if somebody around you is asking for some advice in their respective careers or lives, provide that encouragement, because it makes a little bit big difference. I'm normally a pretty confident person to begin with, but that was a big step, big unknown, and having a few people just tell me it's worth trying gave me the confidence to do it, and it really changed my life. So I want to talk, maybe before I go to the next slide, just a little shout out for Singapore, because I want to keep it on the personal side a little bit as well. One of the most amazing things to do in Singapore, I think, call it two. First, the gardens by the bay. I know there's the very iconic Marina Bay Sands and the Ferris wheel. But behind that, actually, is these artificial super trees that they're called. And there's these beautiful, amazing light shows that are on every day, free to the public. Absolutely spectacular. And the second thing is, while food can be very expensive in Singapore, as can a lot of things, there's actually some of the cheapest Michelin star restaurants in the world. So one of my favorite restaurants in Singapore was a little dumpling shop, street, you know, hole in the wall in Chinatown. You get amazing Xiaolongbao dumplings for about 50 or 60 cents each. So really great, you know, things to do in Singapore, and absolutely lovely city. But so that brings me to Cambodia, and I don't know how much everyone knows about Cambodia. For me, I knew absolutely nothing. I was entirely ignorant of the history of the country, of what it would be like to be an emerging market. And I really got comfortable around accepting the role ultimately and moving there because we had a couple expats in the senior management team of the organization, namely the CFO and CEO, who had been there for about 10 years. So I figured there's an element of safety there that gave me the confidence to figure that I can make it myself. Which I think was a good decision, but coincidentally, they both happened to leave about 6 months after I joined, which I'll talk a little bit about. But for those of you who don't know, Cambodia has an absolutely amazing history. It's a relatively small country, about 15 million people. The capital, Phnom Penh, has 2 million people, so it's relatively small. But its history is very long. It used to be known as the Angkor Empire, which during its peak was actually one of the largest parts of civilization in the world. More recently, a couple hundred years ago, it was colonized under French rule. And that actually, to this day, has a big impact on some of the architecture in the city, some of the language that people speak. So I ended up speaking a bit more French in Cambodia than I did for a number of years here, actually, which I really enjoyed. But the most impactful part of the Cambodian history is very recent, within one generation. I think most people will be familiar with the Vietnam War, but one of the related events is called the Khmer Rouge, which is one of the largest genocides of the 20th century, and millions of Cambodians passed away during that. So as a consequence, Cambodia is one of the youngest countries in the world. Its median age is early 20s at this point. There's not that many people in their 50s and 60s. The life expectancy is still very low. And a lot of the infrastructure in the country was completely destroyed. The goal of the Khmer Rouge during that movement was really to literally reset the country to zero. And they had very nearly succeeded. So on my first day in Cambodia, I was taken to the Genocide Museum and had to absorb all of that. And I went very quickly from an ignorant foreigner happy to come into a new, exciting, flashy job to realizing that I was in a very different place than from Canada. But while that's very difficult to dwell upon, there is also some amazing things that have happened in Cambodia. The younger generation is so optimistic and positive about what they can contribute to their society. Many of my staff during while I was there actually were teachers on the side or had dreams to become teachers, and they believe so much in the power of education. So there's a certain patriotism and nationalism that came out of that that I think is really going to drive the growth and success of the country going forward. And that ties in many ways to the insurance industry in Cambodia and how things operate there. The insurance industry is about 15 years old, life insurance industry in Cambodia. They're pretty open to allowing foreign brands into the market, which is not necessarily the case for all countries in the region. And the regulator themselves, the insurance regulator, doesn't actually have a fully qualified actuary on their staff. They sometimes partner with the Asia Development Bank and a few other organizations when consulting on new regulation. But you know, coming from a country like Canada or Singapore, it's very hard to imagine that kind of state of affairs. And the regulator really relies on some of the larger multinationals to provide expertise and to support some of the efforts in developing regulation. So throughout my time there in Cambodia, there actually was only there's only a draft regulation available on solvency. And so again, there's a lot of things in the market that you cannot imagine coming from a Canadian background where everything is so well established and you know the career progression is pretty well laid out. There's a lot of things that not just the insurers but the regulator is figuring out over time, and there's just a sense of community and sort of getting towards the right objective for society that really made me feel connected to the mission and purpose of what we do as an insurer that sometimes you can get lost on in Canada. You know, we can feel sometimes we're just doing our day-to-day and you know, there's a lot of people around you who can necessarily do the same job. But in Cambodia, it's certainly not the case. And maybe, can you all hear me if I just speak like this? Or not?
Yeah.
That's okay?
Yeah.
Sorry. So funnily enough, so I've been talking with Ben recently, and I think Cambodia just crossed 20 associates in the country. So when it comes to having qualified actuaries and a pipeline of actuarial talent, there's a lot of reliance on foreign actuaries coming in and really setting a standard when it comes to integrity, appropriate methodology, reasonableness of assumptions, and particularly given the experience of the regulator, the fiduciary duty of a chief actuary in Cambodia is really a heavy responsibility that probably when I joined I was not entirely prepared for. The other, I think, very interesting thing I'd say about the Cambodian market is it's not just that the insurance market itself is underdeveloped, but the financial markets are as well. Across a lot of emerging markets, you'll see that access to banks, for example, or credit is something that's actually quite limited across the population. In Cambodia, though, something that's pretty interesting is even the development of the financial markets for people who have access to it is a bit limited. I think when I entered the market, there were about, I just turned it off.
Oh.
Yeah. When I joined the market, I think there were 4 stocks on the index in Cambodia. 4. So not really an asset class that's very liquid or very well diversified. There was 1 corporate bond that was available in the market. And the regulator, not just the insurance regulator, but the banking regulator as well, is quite protective about assets leaving the country. So it's actually a bit prohibitive to invest in international assets, whether that's directly or through third-party providers or alternative financial arrangements. There's some tax implications around that. So that's a very interesting constraint that we have to navigate through. Fortunately, the money market in Cambodia and the deposit rates are relatively high. You could achieve 5-6%, which sounded really good a few years ago. Obviously now, that's more in line with international options. Not just the availability of assets in the market, but also the liquidity of assets in the market and concentration risk. There's not that many options when it comes to investments. So one of the constraints that we had thinking about asset management for our products were how much credit risk we're willing to take. A lot of the banks in Cambodia don't have the same rating, you would say, as not held to some of the same standards as we would see here in Canada, where we have a very highly regulated and excellent banking system. Although one of the very interesting things, and I don't know that it's well known, the National Bank of Canada actually owns one of the top banks in Cambodia. And that's ABA, the Advanced Bank of Asia, which was one of our partners. And it's actually perhaps, I want to say the most, but I'll say one of the most profitable parts of the National Bank of Canada's business operations. So there are really great opportunities, and there's a kind of Canadian tie to my experience there, not just in the insurance sector, but in the banking sector. But certainly we're a lot more constrained in how we can innovate on the product side when it comes to the financial components of those products. At the same time, and this is another theme that happens across emerging markets, people don't really understand insurance in the same way that we do here. It's not a given to get insurance. And the importance of trust that will pay claims when it comes time is something that not every insurer has in the market, simply because of the history. So I mentioned the insurance market, life insurance market's 15 years old. So we had some of our investment related products that had a 10 or 15 year duration. And we were paying out some of the first claims on those products when they, not death claims, but like survival claims, paying out the account value. And we would do a press conference when we pay out a claim. One of the, it's such a different kind of experience than what you would expect here, something that happens every day. And again, we don't think about it. We really saw the impact that it had on individual customers. And our most popular product, just something else that made a big impression on me, was an education savings plan, where at the end of the product, we would basically pay out over 4 years enough to pay tuition, or if something happened to the parent, we'd cover for the child's tuition. And that tie-in to education was something that really energized all of our distribution and was really part of our mission and purpose as an organization. And I'll just repeat it, but I've never felt so tied to the purpose of what we do as an insurance company as when I was there, because we really make a huge impact on society and help people prepare for events. It's a bit taboo to talk about death, to plan for these things. People like to live in the moment because of the history that they've had. They don't like to think about saving for the future, because in their history, things can end very quickly. But we've done a lot of work to build the trust, not just as an individual company, but in the insurance industry, and that's been growing tremendously. Then, just to, I guess, bring it back to the career side of things, one of the really challenging things for me was, well, I'll say COVID. I think we're all challenged by COVID in different ways, but being relatively new in an emerging industry that has all of these constraints, where the economy of the country is very fragile, dependent on exports, dependent on tourism. COVID was really a huge hit to the insurance industry. We're not, the most important thing there when it comes to people's actual livelihood, but being in the organization at that time and having unfilled CFO role for about 6 months at the start of COVID, that I was filling in for, was a tremendous amount of pressure and stress. And I've always been somebody that has a lot of confidence in myself, figure I can find a way through things, but didn't really know how to deal with all of that. There were months where we got our valuation reports and we had to think about requesting for capital, with respect to the solvency of the business, where we saw lapse rates that were, in the industry, north of 50% on some products. People could not afford to continue to pay premiums in many parts of the country. That was really, really challenging to deal with. And being away from family, unable to go home, honestly, I found myself after quite some time knowing that I was burning myself out, withdrawing a little bit, and being unable to ask for help. I think probably a lot of folks here, and probably throughout your careers, you know, we have a lot of confidence in ourselves that I think is well deserved, and want to prove that we can get things done, a bit of afraid of failure. And it was really, really difficult for me to tell some of my bosses, in particularly in the regional office or global office, that we needed a little bit more support to, bring in a CFO for starters. But there were a lot of other things in the business that that we needed more support on from the regional to help manage the balance sheet and get through a very, very difficult COVID period. But fortunately, and I think for anyone thinking about going internationally, it's not just the role that's important, it's the people that you're going to be working with. Had really good people around me who helped get us that support that we need. And while the business is still, and the industry ultimately is still struggling in Cambodia through some of these challenges economically, we were able to pull through it. But I think going through that particular moment was a big lesson for me in terms of empathy, in terms of humility, and just gratitude for having the support network to be able to get through it. I'm sure many of you also had your own different experiences during COVID, and it's just a big lesson for me. And coming into my role in the Philippines, where I'm managing a much larger team, I think that that experience has really helped me be the leader that I need to be to be able to lead well at scale. So then I had been in the role for about 3 years in the middle of COVID, and we were kind of getting to the tail end of it. Things were looking ahead. We had the right plan to get through it. And I was in conversation with our new CEO about, you know, what's next from a career perspective. My contract at the time was 3 years, so it was coming up. I loved Cambodia. I will be happy to go there again. But I wasn't sure what would be next in the career. So I started to be a lot more thoughtful at that point around wanting to pursue specific sets of roles that would give me the skill set to get to the type of roles that I want in the future. I started to think two or three roles ahead, and was pretty happy to wait in Cambodia and stay there longer, extend my stay. I still had things to learn. But one of the roles that I really was excited about became open, which is this role that I have in the Philippines. And again, just thinking about how small a world it is, the person who had the role previously was the person who hired me in Canada. So he had moved to the Philippines, and we hadn't been the closest of friends, you know, forever, but we had a very good relationship and had a lot of mutual respect for each other. And he mentioned to me that he was planning to move on to another role in the organization, and, you know, if I may be interested in being considered as one of the successors for the role. Again, so in Cambodia, while I was a chief actuary, my team was about size 15 people. The role that I've got now in the Philippines at the time was over 100 people. So very different skill set required to be successful in that role, and not necessarily obvious that transition would be something that would go well, right? Normally you'd think it would be ideal to have a candidate who's had bigger teams. So I spent a lot of time thinking about if I would be able to be successful if I went into a role that required a very different skill set, where the technical nature of the role is actually very unimportant in what I do today, and the managerial skill set is entirely important. But they needed somebody on site, obviously, to manage that large a team. And there's not a lot of people who wanted to move in the middle of COVID. That was not an easy process. But I felt really confident that it would give me the skill set that I was looking for, that over time I'd be able to settle in well and make an impact. So decided to go for it, and was very fortunate to be able to get that role. Then I actually had to get there, and that was a very difficult experience by itself. So I had to leave Cambodia. My work visa expired, and I didn't have my visa to the Philippines. So I had to go back to Canada. I was working overnight for a couple months. That was also a very difficult experience. Especially, I hadn't been home for years. I wanted to spend quality time with family. But doing that while working overnight hours was a bit of a miserable experience, to be honest. So with no end in sight about the visa process for the Philippines, again, Philippines had one of the toughest situations when it came to dealing with COVID in the world. They were on perpetual lockdown for almost 2 years. They didn't just have face mask requirements, they had face shield requirements when you exited the house for quite a long time. They had bigger problems to deal with than granting visas to foreigners. So I was actually able to secure a visa to get back to Asia, but that was in our regional office in Hong Kong. So I was in Hong Kong for about 6 months during COVID, really doing the role remotely, but at least in the right time zone. So working with our folks in the regional office, which was a wonderful experience. Had to go through another 2 week quarantine, locked in a hotel, unable to leave, windows locked shut. But I knew that, or I trusted rather, that 6 months, a year from that point, that things would be more settled. And so there was a lot of delayed gratification when it came to the sacrifices of getting to the role in the Philippines. But I really enjoyed Hong Kong, similar to Singapore, very global city, but has a bit of a longer history, more character. I won't talk too much about the situation with China, but it is very interesting from the insurance market perspective how that relates. A big part of the insurance premium in Hong Kong comes from visitors from China, and that was something that was very heavily disrupted during COVID, and fortunately now has started to come back. But so the business there was finding the right way to handle that. I absolutely love being in Hong Kong. The subway system, which I know we like to complain about here, is absolutely incredible. Personally, I fell in love with hiking in Hong Kong, and from the subway system, you can access hundreds of different hiking trails. There's the Hong Kong Disneyland, there's the harbor, the skyline, absolutely incredible. But again, it was, while there's a lot of positive things there, it was a really difficult time and really hard for me to be away from the team. I was very fortunate, I think, to have a leader in the regional office who's I have a dotted line to, who had also moved to Hong Kong in the middle of COVID, expecting to be able to go visit family whenever she wanted and being stuck. So we kind of bonded a little bit over that, but sharing our vulnerability, I think, really helped us be a lot more resilient. And it's part of some of the values that we have as an organization is sharing humanity, and it's not always what we think about first when it comes to delivering business outcomes, but I think really helped me get through there. But then still had to lead the team, 100 plus people, and the team supports 25 different business units across 11 markets. They were working from home, even though, because of the restrictions that existed in the Philippines. And many of them had been hired during the pandemic as well. So managing that team was something that required a lot of effort, but also something that can't be done through individual interaction with everybody. Is that for me? Not for me. I think I still have a couple minutes left. And then one of the big tests, I'd say, of as I was settling into Hong Kong, there was actually a huge super typhoon in the Philippines that damaged severely one of the offices that we had. Fortunately for my particular team, we didn't have anyone who was impacted too much, and we were able to get them to safety. But a part of the leadership team of the organization, we have 8,000 employees, about 2,000 in the site that was hit. And being able to support the leadership team and the business crisis management remotely while I was settling into a new country was something that I was totally unprepared for. And frankly, learned a lot about what I should have done as a leader and trying to find more ways to help even though I wasn't there. And that's also a realization for me going into the Philippines of that's another type of thing I hadn't really seen. Singapore, Cambodia, and Hong Kong to some degree all protected from these kind of natural disasters in a way that the Philippines is not. So in the Philippines, we'll regularly have earthquakes, monsoons. The team's, okay, we'll leave the building for 5 minutes. It's like a fire drill that we have here. You know, it gives me a lot of anxiety, but the team is so wonderful and resilient through that. So I've been in the Philippines now for about a year and a half in the country and about 2 years into the role now. The Philippines is a really, really interesting market. The insurance industry there is over 100 years old. So while it's still an emerging market as a country, the financial and insurance sectors have a bit more development. The population in the Philippines is, it's one of the most populous countries in the world, over 100 million people. The city of Manila itself, where I'm based, is 15 million people. It's one of the most dense cities in the world. And then, you know, it's also a country that has 7,000 different islands. So there's so many different things happening in the Philippines at the same time. But it was really actually easy to integrate there from a cultural perspective. English is actually the official language of the Philippines, even though they have a local language, Tagalog, that everybody speaks as well. But it makes it very easy to interact with the business environment, with the regulator, with the community. And Filipinos, I think, well, there's a lot of Filipinos in Canada, but very well known for their hospitable nature and being very welcoming. So I felt I was able to fit in very quickly. A couple thoughts I just share on the Philippine on the personal side. It's one of my favorite pictures, but Christmas looks a little bit different in the Philippines. So I used to go back home all the time for Christmas. Now I try to come back in the summer as I am now. So it's Christmas on the beach, not so bad. One of the really interesting things as well in the Philippines is they do have a really large actuarial community. And it's a very, very, very close community that, while it's large, it's small enough that everybody knows each other. You've had local fellowship. They have a credentialing body locally that not every market has. So I was able to go to the first actuarial society convention that they had in person in a number of years. And, you know, they're recognizing service of 50, 60 years for some of the from the founding members of the society. You see multiple generations of Filipino actuaries, all of them really at the same event. And I was able to be there with my team, where we're one of the largest actuarial employers in the Philippines, many of them meeting their peers for the first time, getting recognition for some of the designations that they'd achieved. And it was just really, really a special moment for me, because we got to kind of close the chapter on COVID in a way through that, and sort of symbolized our start to the new normal. Couple other things, and then I guess just want to close it off and open to a few more questions if there's any. Being in such a large role now, supporting 11 different markets, one of the really tough but great things that I've had the opportunity to do is send about 10 of my team members over the last year internationally. I've been so appreciative of the support and sponsorship that I've received in my career, the value of mentorship, and been really fortunate to be able to do that to some of my teammates. Very tough because we're growing and there's not that much senior actuarial talent in the Philippines. There's a lot of emerging actuarial talent, and the entry level pipeline at the academic level is very, very strong. But within my team of 160, we actually only have a handful of fellows. And so as we're meeting growing demand, that's very interesting. Balance. A lot of the team has aspirations to travel internationally, to see different parts of the world, and they're very capable as well. So managing the career development of that many qualifying actuaries is something that I view as just an equally great responsibility as being in the chief actuary role. Then just want to leave a few more time for questions, but wanted to talk a little bit about how I think about the just evaluating international opportunities. And it's a little bit more complicated, I think, than applying for a different kind of job. So just some advice for those of you who might think about looking for international opportunities in your future, and wondering if, for those of you who've experienced it as well, if you have similar reflections on what you might do differently if you were in the same position again. But for me, I think it starts with timing. It's really difficult to pack up your entire life, move to another market, start from scratch socially, and meet new people in the work environment, learn how to fit in. But if you have the right support system, if you have the right people around you, whether they're there physically or virtually, that can make a big difference. So think about if the timing's right for you, and if not, it's okay to try later. There's actually lots of opportunity, which exists, particularly in Asia. There's a lot of demand for actuarial talent. So if it's not the right time, that's okay. Second, I think just identifying the universe of roles that's available and figuring out if you'd like to apply to them. It's easy to think there's not opportunities available, but once you look, whether that's through job boards, through recruiters, through peer networks, there's probably going to be things that come up. And certainly if you express your interest and give yourself enough of a window, those opportunities will become known to you. I think having advocates, sponsors, mentors, people who've been international is a big advantage as well. But also finding the right role. I think I've been able to identify roles that I probably wasn't able to perform optimally for the first 6 months that I was in, but I was able to learn enough to be competent afterwards and to excel over time. And so I think having the confidence to apply to roles that you're not a perfect fit for, but that with the right training and support, you can do very well in over time, something that I encourage all of you to think about. And then thinking also not just, I think moving internationally, especially for a role that may be great in the moment, but it's not going to contribute to your future career progression, is something that I would be cautious of. So I always try to think now about when I look at my next role, how is it going to contribute to a future career progression? And in particular, one of the reasons why I took this role in the Philippines was to develop a leadership and managerial skill set. And it's certainly rare to have such a large leadership accountability in an actuarial function. So that was something that was really attractive to me. And then I've also, from an interview process, I come to think about interviews very much as a dialogue. I think early on in our careers, we tend to think of them more, a lot of pressure around, are they going to choose me? Are they going to say yes? But particularly when you're thinking about international roles, it's important that you're assessing the company, the culture, the manager, the team, some of the hidden business problems that people are not probably going to tell you about right away, and doing your due diligence. And if a role's not the right fit for you, it's a lot better to pass on it and wait for the next one than go into a situation where you're not setting yourself up for success. And then the last thing here that I'll say is just that I think a good actuarial slogan, risk is opportunity. But I think that I've really been able to benefit from, whether it's through timing or whether it's through some of the nature of being in emerging markets or different roles, be able to take advantage of opportunities that not a lot of people were applying for at the same time. And I think that's always going to be true, is there's different opportunities out there, especially in Asia in the actuarial field, where there are roles that are challenging to fill. And sometimes, when a lot of people think one way, that creates opportunity on the other side if the market overreacts. So encourage you to think about something that maybe on the face of it doesn't seem immediately appealing, but if you really examine that carefully, there can be a lot of hidden benefits in some of the roles that are available. So I will stop there, and I think I would love to hear your questions, but also if anyone's been through a similar experience and want to share their perspective or anything that resonated with them, I'd really appreciate that. Hi. Yes.
Where do you see the trend of these, offshore centers that support global business going in the medium to long term? And what do you think are the factors that would influence that trajectory?
Yeah, it's a great question. One of the relatively unique things about the operation that we have is it's captive and performed in-house. That takes a huge amount of time and effort and patience to scale and to do well. I know there are some organizations that are doing or are thinking about doing the same thing. Obviously, we're in a cost-constrained environment these days, and the level of talent that's available in some emerging markets, whether that's the Philippines, India is another great example, certainly a very viable option for organizations to explore. For organizations that are perhaps a bit smaller, there are also third-party companies that and organizations that will are available to outsource these kind of roles to. I think it's a great solution. And it's a market that will grow and will continue to grow. The difficulty really is around having the commitment to do it right, the patience to train people up. The quality of talent is there, but again, one of the advantages that we have in the Canadian program is when you get through your schooling, you go into a company, you've got 100 fellows around you or in your network, and there's such mature processes that are pre-IFRS 17 relatively stable, well documented, and that's just not the same case when you're setting up a center like this. You have to be patient with training people. You have to build more incentives, not just financial, but around exam progression. There's not the same community around that. But at the end of the day, the quality of the talent is amazing. I'd say it's equal to what we have here. There are things that are challenging to navigate through, like managing a different time zone, right? We support markets in Asia where we're in the same time zone. We support Canada where it's 12 hours different. Some people find that difficult. Others, one of my favorite stories from one of our line actuaries here is she'll regularly say during quarter end, she wakes up, the first email she reads is, here's a problem, my run crashed, we need to figure it out. But then the next email she reads is, oh, the team in the Philippines figured it out, solved it, reran, here's the results, so she can get on with her day. There's a huge value to be had in that kind of business model. The other thing I guess I'd say around it as well is, particularly for organizations that operate in different geographies, having some centralization and shared service, whether that's in a location like the Philippines or whether here, which many of you will have, there's a lot of opportunities to do things more efficiently, to standardize best practices, and we can create a lot of value that way, and we do. So I think it's a business model that's going to grow and continue to be very successful in a number of markets.
Follow up question.
Sure.
In terms of challenges and risks, where do you see, what's your opinion on the emerging regulatory framework on data and jurisdiction coming from the US and Europe on, affecting this offshore model?
Yeah, great question. So in terms of the offshore business model, one of the things that's of crucial importance to us is data residency, data privacy and protection. There are ways from an IT perspective to make sure that we're not actually accessing or transporting data virtually across jurisdictions. So it's something to be very conscious about, but most regulators are willing to support these kind of arrangements so long as there's appropriate documentation on the data residency, on BCP testing, quality control, service level management. There's a number of criteria that we'll have to fulfill, and we go through audits to support all of those things, but most markets will remain friendly to it. There are some, Indonesia or China, that look upon it a bit less favorably because they want to invest in the local industry. So there was a big SOA initiative in Indonesia to develop actuarial talent. It's something the regulator is very protective of. So for other reasons, it may be difficult to operate that kind of model. But from a regulatory perspective, there's very good guidelines that are in place or are being put in place to protect consumer data. And those are things that we have to abide by. But it's important to do, and we do it well. Hi.
Thank you, Jonathan. I learned something really new that Convergent has a French history. Thank you for sharing that. I have a question, more personal. So, can you please share what were the arguments you used to convince your partner back then to go to Cambodia? Don't feel obligated to share.
It's okay. I wish I had better ones. I failed. So, to be honest, I know it is a bit personal, and wish everyone not to avoid that situation. But I just had never anticipated such an international experience being part of my career. It caught me off guard, and it was not something that we had spoken about in the context of our relationship. And ultimately, I think it's actually better that we mutually agreed on that outcome rather than trying to force it to work and having some resentment, or it probably wouldn't have worked out in the end anyways. Having, I think, very transparent communication and buy-in from not just your partner, but other family and friends in your life is absolutely critical to be successful in an international move. And there's no right or wrong answer. Many people that will mean don't go, and that's okay. or maybe go later at a different stage of life. So I didn't have very compelling arguments, I guess, is the answer. Yeah, which I can laugh about now, but was takes a few years to get there. Yeah. Hi, Mercy.
I have a question. Do you get paid in local currencies? And if you are, do you hedge your currency?
That's a wonderful question. So when it comes to compensation for foreigners coming into local markets, foreign markets, there's a few different types of arrangements that are available depending on the company, depending on the role. So there are expat kind of packages where normally you'll still be tied to your home country, where you'll receive your existing compensation in your home country plus allowances in the local currency covering things like housing and goods and services and that sort of thing. Or you can just be localized, right? And receive your compensation in the local currency. I don't do a whole lot to hedge currency risk, to be honest. It's fluctuating a lot, but certainly in the Philippines right now, the dollar is very heavily correlated with a few different, so many different factors in the environment, but it's depreciated substantially against Canada and US dollar, and that hasn't been very easy, I'll say. Thanks. I saw a few more. Please.
Yeah, I'm just curious what mentality you have currently. Like, you've been out for like 6 years, you said.
Yeah.
So are you, in your mind, are you thinking of like, oh, I want to achieve these certain things in the emerging markets and then go back to Canada? Or is the Philippines now your home? Like, do you feel at home when you're abroad now?
I definitely would say that I made a home in Cambodia, and that was really hard to leave. I'm still settling into the Philippines. Well, it's been a year, but to be very honest, the traffic in Manila is some of the worst in the world, and it takes a lot of time to get anywhere. It's harder to settle in. I really enjoy being in Asia, being able to experience different cultures, architecture, history, language, ways of working. But I'll admit that it's been absolutely exhausting to move so frequently, and I'd like to do a little bit less frequently going forward. I could see myself in the Philippines for quite a while longer. I'm really enjoying it there. But in the long term, I guess I would say personally, I'm location agnostic. That won't be true for everybody. As it pertains to career development, I've been targeting to get on a CEO track, which still takes, you know, quite some time, but I'm thinking about how the different roles that I'll take in the future will connect to the skill set needed to get there. But if I have the opportunity to try different markets or potentially try different regions in the future, I'm very open to it. I probably should have said this earlier, but I think seeing different cultures, different countries, just really makes you a lot more open-minded and really challenges some of the default assumptions you have about how things should work in the world. And so I feel I've become a lot more of a more patient and honestly a better person seeing different markets, and I feel like experiencing that more would only provide, you know, similarly beneficial perspective.
Yeah.
Thanks. Did we have one more? Sorry? Last one.
Sorry, thank you for sharing your story. So I just want to ask your perspective on defining fitting in. And also I presume some of the hardship that you have faced as a management role, not speaking the local language.
Yeah, I think it was a very strange experience for me to feel like I'm a minority, to be honest, going into Cambodia, going into the Philippines. In Singapore and Hong Kong, they're so multinational, multicultural. Even if it's a largely Asian population, it still feels, in a way, being similar to being here. But both Cambodia and the Philippines, the population is very homogenous when it comes to the language, the religion, the ethnic background. So, you know, you definitely stand out. And I think fitting in is not about really trying to fit in, but it's about accepting where you can and where you can't, and really being open-minded that whether you think you're right or not, you're wrong, right? I say that a bit in jest, but there's a really different approach that's required to communicate, particularly feedback, I would say, in different markets, and particularly from a managerial perspective, being sensitive to how people need to receive information, and how they understand information, especially when the language is different, is something that I think is a point of failure for a lot of foreigners coming into different countries. Just as a example, one of the lessons I learned in Cambodia is whenever I gave instruction to someone, I will never ask them, do you understand? Because they will say, yes. It doesn't mean that they understand. Usually I will say, can you explain to me, you know, what I've shared or what you're going to do after hearing this? And that allows us to have a more constructive dialogue. Or just another example, I think expressing disagreement in certain cultures in Southeast Asia is a bit more sensitive. It's very difficult to do that effectively in a group environment. People like to be pulled aside and to receive the news with a little bit of bluntness and positivity around it. That tact isn't always necessary in a North American business environment. But I always try to be very transparent, and there are times where I've had to apologize for expressing something in a way that wasn't effective, something I learned to be a lot better at. And now I just am very transparent that I'm sensitive to these things, and I tell people, look, I may not get it right the first time. I may do something that doesn't fit into the culture, and if so, please correct me. So I think having a bit of humility about fitting in is also really important, and I think people really appreciate the effort. So if you're transparent, if you're vulnerable, and open-minded, it can work. Thank you. I think being kicked out now.